Today's Fireside Chat is all about cultivating joy. So in this Fireside Chat, I'm going to be sharing some of the most compelling and most cutting-edge neuroscience and research that's available around why these practices can have such a lasting impact on your life. Much of this work is based on the research of PhD Rick Hansen. When I give corporate workshops or do keynote speaking, I often ask the audience, how many of you have heard of the concept of neuroplasticity? And a few years ago when I gave these talks, there would be maybe one or two or three hands that would get raised. Lately, sometimes I'll have a third or half or even the majority of the audience who will raise their hands saying that they've heard of this concept, which is amazing news and says a lot about how far this research has been disseminated. So the brain is the organ that learns, and it's designed to be changed by your experiences. So whatever we repeatedly sense and feel and want and think is slowly but surely sculpting neural structure in your brain. The concept of neuroplasticity, they used to think that our brains changed and grew a lot when we were little, but that then once you became an adult, your brain was static and it was no longer changing or growing. Well, in recent years, scientists have discovered that that is simply not true. As it turns out, all of your mental activity, sights and sounds, thoughts and feelings, conscious and unconscious processes, is based on underlying neural activity. And you can think of your neural activity like ripples on a river. Much of your mental and therefore neural activity kind of flows through your brain like ripples on a river with no lasting effects on the channel. But if you have intense, prolonged, or repeated mental or neural activity, especially if it's conscious, what they've discovered is it will leave an enduring imprint on your neural structure. So think of that like a surging current in a river and how that could actually reshape a riverbed over time. And there's a saying in neuroscience, which is that neurons that fire together wire together. So what that means is that mental states become neural traits. Day after day, your mind is building your brain. I like to talk of it in terms of, let's say that you're stuck in traffic. And the very first time you're stuck in traffic, you get angry. You've never had that response before. So the first time you have that response, it's almost like you're bushwhacking through the jungle to make a path from one neural pathway to another. The next time you're stuck in traffic and you get angry, sort of like you've bushwhacked through the jungle and now you're walking back and forth on that path. So you have a little dirt path that connects traffic with anger. Let's say you keep having this habitual response over and over again. Whenever you're in traffic, you get angry. So next thing you know, it's like you've put down several wooden planks in the jungle to make a path. Then you've added some cement. And before you know it, it's like you have a 5-lane superhighway in your brain, traffic, angry. The response happens so quickly that it doesn't even feel like a choice. How many of you have had that experience where you have a response or a reaction in life that's happened so fast, it feels automatic and it doesn't feel as though you have a choice? And oftentimes, we don't want to be having that response or that reaction. If we could choose any response, we would not choose that one if we could make a different choice in a more conscious way. I know I've had that experience a lot in my life where, you know, not my best self comes out and it feels so automatic and as though there wasn't even a choice. It just happened. Well, when day after day, your mind is building your brain, this is what scientists call experience-dependent neuroplasticity, which is a really hot area of research these days. There was one fascinating study where they found that London taxi drivers memorizing the city's really confusing snarl of streets have thickened neural layers in their hippocampus, the region that helps make visual spatial memories. Like building a muscle, these taxi drivers worked a part of their brain and actually grew new tissue there. And another study has found that mindfulness meditators have increased gray matter, which means a thicker cortex, in three key regions: the prefrontal areas behind the forehead that control attention, the insula, which we use for tuning into ourselves and others, and the hippocampus. So your experiences don't just grow new synapses, remarkable as that is by itself, but they also actually reach down into your genes and the DNA and change how they operate. For instance, if you routinely practice relaxation, it will increase the activity of genes that calm down stress reactions, making you more resilient. So the basic premise behind all of these studies is one simple truth. Your experiences matter, and where you put your focus and your attention in life is actually going to create different experiences for you in the future. So to me, when I learned this research, I was amazed and inspired and flabbergasted and kind of felt like this is the best use of my time. Like, why am I not focusing a lot of my waking life on rewiring my brain so that I can be happier, be more focused, all of these great things? Why would that not be one of my top priorities every single day of my life, to have such a better experience of what it's like to be human? And so that's why I've become so passionate about this work. And what I've noticed in myself is I really do have better, more joyful, happier reactions these days than I did several years ago when I started using some of these tools. I think my friends and my husband would agree with that. You know, recently something happened when I was with some girlfriends where someone was kind of rude to me. And all of my friends said, "I can't believe you didn't respond to that, Vanessa. If that was me, I would have, you know, bitched that person out," excuse the language, or said, you know, "I would have had a much more negative reaction, and you were so calm." And I think, you know, it's because I've spent all of these years rewiring my brain and retraining my reactions that I'm able to have a more calm response in some situations. Now, granted, I still get super triggered in lots of other situations, and that shows me that I have a lot that I can still learn and grow. So it is a continual process. I think it's a lifelong journey, and you will see benefits pretty quickly that will encourage you and motivate you to keep going with these practices so that you can experience even more of the good and even more of the benefits. So essentially, if you take away one thing from this fireside chat, I hope that it's that what you pay attention to and what you rest your mind upon is the primary shaper of your brain and therefore of your experience. And look, I'm not suggesting that life is always going to be perfect. Of course, there will be things that don't go your way. There's always going to be problems at work or maybe physical pain or a serious worry. But on the whole, you have complete control and a lot of influence over where your mind rests and where you put your attention and your focus. This means you can deliberately prolong and even create the experiences that will shape your brain for the better. And that's what we're going to be doing in today's guided meditation with taking in the good. One of the reasons why it's so important to cultivate joy and take in the good is because scientists believe that your brain has a built-in negativity bias. In other words, as we evolved over millions of years, it was a lot more important for us to notice and react to and remember difficult or challenging things than it was to notice the positive. That's because in the tough environments in which our ancestors lived, you know, if they didn't notice that there was a lion or some threat to their survival, they usually had one shot at getting past that. You know, if they failed to avoid something difficult, a predator or natural hazard, then they wouldn't pass on their genes. Versus they didn't get a lot of evolutionary benefit from, you know, noticing and appreciating the pretty flowers around them. So the negativity bias shows up in lots of ways. For example, studies have found that in a relationship, it typically takes 5 good interactions to make up for a single bad one. People will work much harder to avoid losing $100 than they'll work to gain the same amount of money. And painful experiences are much more memorable than pleasurable ones. So here's a question for you. In your own mind, what do you usually think about at the end of the day? Do you think about the 50 things that went right that day or the one thing that went wrong? Or for me, I know that when I give a keynote speech or do a corporate workshops, I'll often get like lots of positive feedback. And then if I hear one slightly negative thing, that's where all of my attention goes. So we naturally can focus on the negative, and the brain is like Velcro for negative experiences, but Teflon for positive one. So the brain is biased against lasting contentment and fulfillment, but you don't have to accept that. Now with neuroplasticity, there's research that shows that you can actually rewire your brain to focus on the good and then experience more happiness and more joy in life. And you'll still see the tough parts of life, but you'll be able to change them or bear them if you focus on the good. And what will happen over time when you train your brain to take in the good and absorb it is that instead of positive experiences washing through you like water through a sieve, they will collect in your implicit memory deep down in your brain. And you'll build these new neural pathways, and all of those neurons focused on positivity and joy and happiness that fire together will begin to wire together. Yay! So that's what we'll be doing today. I'll be taking you through a three-step process to take in and savor the good. The first step is to look for good facts and turn them into good experiences. The second step is to really enjoy or savor the experience. And then the third step is to intend and sense that the good experience is sinking into you deeply. So I'll be showing you exactly how to do those three steps in today's guided meditation. One other thing to keep in mind is as you're doing this practice of taking in and savoring the good, if you notice that you have any reluctance to feeling good, such as thinking that you don't deserve to, or that it's selfish or vain, or maybe even shameful to feel pleasure, or that if you feel good, you'll lower your guard and then bad things will happen. So there's lots of different barriers we can have to feeling good. And these are common and understandable, but they get in the way of you taking in the resources you need to feel better, have more strength, and to have more insight to give to others. So acknowledge them to yourself and then turn your attention back to the good news. Keep opening up to the good, breathing, savoring, and relaxing as you let the good facts and the good experiences and memories you're savoring really affect you. You know, I gave a talk at this Women in Research Executive Leadership Summit, and one of the women said, you know, I love all these practices you're teaching, but I just feel like it's selfish. And there's, you know, like people starving and people dying in the world. And here I am, like doing all these tools to make myself happier when I already have so much. And the thing I said to her, so that's a common barrier that some people feel, that it's selfish to get our needs met or to do really good self-care. But it is a lot like they say on an airplane, where you have to put your own oxygen mask on first before you can help anyone else. So we have to focus on ourselves and our happiness. That's actually one of the greatest gifts you can give to all the people you love and to the world and to this planet. I don't know about you, but I am a better mother, a better wife, a better worker, a better entrepreneur, a better daughter, a better sister, a better everything when I train my brain to focus on the good. I'm less critical, I'm less judgmental of all the people around me. And so everyone benefits. On top of that, I roughly quoted a study to this woman who asked that question, where they did a study, I think in the 70s or 80s, I'll have to look up the exact data, where they had a group of people meditate in Washington, D.C. For a certain very finite period of time. And what they found is the crime rate dropped during the period when those people gathered together to meditate and set the intention of peace. So who knows, maybe meditation and focusing on the good can actually change the world. So there's less war and there's less violence and less crime. So I would argue that you are doing something for the planet every time you sit down and you calm your mind and you focus on the good. Thank you so much for joining me in today's fireside chat on cultivating joy. Now that you've listened, I'd love for you to leave a comment. So scroll down below and please leave a comment and let us know, what did you think of today's fireside chat? What did you think of the daily meditation? If you have any questions or things you want to share with the community, this is the place where all the discussion is going to be happening. So go ahead and scroll down now and leave a comment and let us know, what helps you cultivate joy in your daily life? And what are some of the things that you struggle with? We would love to hear from you. So So please, please, please leave a comment right now. Let us know what you thought. And thank you so much for joining me. We'll see you again tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.